Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. So thank you for being here. I appreciate you showing up. How was your day? Did you go to work? Did you take your kids to school? Did you take yourself to school? Did your kids take you to work? Whatever you did, I hope you had a great day. And I'm glad that you decided to come here and sit with me so that we can talk about some shit for a little bit. Every week, when I think about how and what I'm going to say, which I don't really ever put that much effort into it, but I always consider how special it is to have this opportunity that, in a way, you gift to me by giving me your ear. And I just can't believe how lucky I am to be able to have this outlet. And so I want to start off right away by saying thank you. I appreciate you being here. And the 2 feet that I, the Gingerbread Man, stand on is, one, this idea of creative living. I think that we have this immense ability to choose for ourselves destinations. We have the opportunity to make our lives. And I see that as an artistic expression, only in this situation, the pen that creates the strokes, which would be our lives, is choice. Now, this can be thought of like just like in quantum physics, they have this multiple worlds hypothesis or many worlds hypothesis, where we have parallel worlds coexisting, and it's like, every time you make a decision, you could have a multiplicity of potentiality. And that, to me, screams of some sort of randomness to an extent. Now, in philosophy, you have this idea of determinism, where everything is determined. And you see this a lot with religious arguments towards existence. And idea of what existence is, like an explanation for existence, would be an ontology. And when we have a determined system, everything is already set in place. Within a free system, within the free will argument, you have constant and effortful implementation of free choices and free will. Now, I would say that there's probably a compatible blending and mixture of the two, because not everything is just black and white, you know. But I think that if anything is determined, we can't see it as such. And so we freely move within the system that we have. And even if the system that we have is structured and determined, we still have this freedom of choice. Now, I just find that so incredible that I have made myself the way that I am. And I'm watching my son do it, where he's making himself the way that he's going to be. Now, how invigorating is it to think that you could make yourself whatever you want? I know that sounds empty, and I know it sounds like a platitude, but I take it serious. And I want you to consider how artistic your choices are for your life. Now, the other foot that I stand on is the idea of unconditional love. Now, I listen to a lot of true crime, and I listen to a lot of stories from a lot of different other podcast providers, because this is probably my favorite form of entertainment and medium. But I listened to a lot of cult stories, especially from the 60s and the 70s. And one of the stories that I've heard a lot is like Charles Manson. And this is one of the things that he said a lot, was this idea of like free love. But then, of course, it got blended with LSD and a bunch of wackadoodle mysticism and just straight outright abuse of people. But what I find interesting is how what I'm saying here about love and unconditional love is It's an old idea and it's been co-opted towards a lot of disgusting things. And I think of love, not the conditioned variety, not romantic love, but this idea of connection between all of life's implements and all of the material objects that we see. And everything is hung in a balance, even in the microcosm, even when we think about like atoms and the strong and weak forces that amalgamate neutrons and protons, there's this tug between objects towards other objects. Now, that could be very abstract and very discombobulated from something that's realistic. But in a human life, we have other humans that we're interacting with. And that's compelling to me because within all these free choices that we have when we're making our lives and we're creating ourselves, we also have the ability to impact and touch other people's lives. And there's ways that we can show that we're paying attention. There's ways that we can show that we have compassion. And these different tactics, I would consider as loving tactics. And loving tactics would promote the growth of teamwork. And the team could be as big or as small as you want to consider it, even like a family team or a work team, or just you and another partner team. Now, there's certain actions that we can do to help make that glue stickier. And then there's certain actions that we can do to belittle these attachments and belittle these relationships and all these structures, even if a lot of these structures are invisible that connect us to other people. So think about all the different ways that you can structurally affect your relationships and the people that you interact with, and consider what you can do to make the atmosphere more loving. But you're not non-existent. You're not small. You have an impact, even if it's not the one that you intended. So if I can have anything go out into the world this week, it's just that kind of awareness of what we're doing, right? And I would love to hear back from anybody who would like to talk about any of this stuff. My email is thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com, which is also available in the show notes. If you want to talk about anything that you're working on or anything that you disagree with me about, and we can come together as a community and see what we can do to make the world a better place. So that's my point. That's my purpose. That's what I'm trying to do here. Now, moving forward, I want to talk a little bit about microdosing psychedelics, primarily LSD. LSD is a very strong substance by milligram, not even milligrams. We're usually taking portions of milligrams. In fact, Albert Hofmann accidentally dosed himself by absorbing it into his skin during laboratory experiments when he was looking for the different compounds that appear in ergot fungus. And I don't remember exactly right now what they were trying to make. I think it had something to do with respiratory stimulation or something that they were studying. But the substance is so powerful, so strong, that he even doubted that that's what was getting him. Now, LSD usually shows up on blotter papers, which are these absorbent pieces of paper, or they can show up inside vials of just in liquid form, and that can be dropped onto candies or can be then dissolved onto more papers. Most of the time I've purchased LSD on paper, on blotter, and then I will cut the hits, because these little tiny squares that the drug shows up on, then I'll cut those hits into even smaller pieces. And that's what I'll usually take for my microdose. I've also heard of some people dissolving LSD into alcohol or even water because it's water soluble, and then cutting their dose into even smaller chunks and pieces that way by then drinking, you know, milliliters or portions, and they have a rough idea of how much is in there. So with a microdose, the idea is that you're looking for something that is sub-noticeable, so subtlety. So something that's subtle is almost underneath awareness. So with a microdose, you don't really want to be high, which is where I tend to overshoot it. So most of my micros are mediums, but I'm comfortable with working and doing what I need to do with my medicine during those time periods. So it all depends on what you're comfortable with and what you understand is copacetic and not dangerous and where you're still taking care of business, right? So I don't even take large amounts of LSD. I have experiences with acid going all the way back to when I was 13 years old. I did quite a bit in high school, and it seemed like almost every other weekend I would be doing LSD and then coming into school on Mondays and I'd be frying. But I had a lot of intense experiences and a lot of beautiful experiences when I was younger, and I had a lot of scary experiences. One of the spookiest ones that got me was after my childhood, when I was probably about 20 years old, maybe 21, if just turned 21. I was living in an apartment in northern Colorado. I hadn't quite got custody of my son yet, and so it was a single one-bedroom apartment that was empty. I didn't even have any living room furniture. It was just like a bedroom and some kitchen stuff that I could kind of live in. And I went and bought some acid dose from a friend of mine. And I remember him saying when he got it, he looked in the vial and he could see sparkly stuff floating in the vial. And so he said, "I think this shit's pretty strong. Be careful." And I bought one hit, and I've taken multiple hits before, and usually one can be strong, but usually not, you know? Like, most of the time, if I was trying to see something, I feel like I'd take two, you know? So I wasn't expecting anything super remarkable, which was my mistake. And so I get into my house, it's like 1 o'clock. I remember it was like 12, it was like noon, you know? And I took the acid, and about 10 minutes after I took it, I started to feel anxious. So I went down to go smoke a cigarette, and I started getting really shaky. And I was like, oh fuck, if I can already feel it this strongly 20 minutes in, what am I gonna do for the rest of today? You know, because LSD takes a while to build up. Like, usually I don't hit my peak for about 3 or 4 hours. And sometimes you don't even feel anything for the first hour at all. And the fact that I was feeling stuff so strongly at 20 minutes, I was beginning to be really concerned. And so I rush upstairs and I lay down in bed, and I remember I put on Life with David Attenborough, and I just started the first episode, and I remember I'm just, from the jump, I'm just trying to hold myself together because existential fear is crawling up from my spine, and I don't know if I'm going to be okay or not, and I'm shaky. And so with serotonergics, you're always at risk of having something called serotonin sickness, especially if you take serotonergic, like SSRIs, like antidepressants, and then you take another serotonin drug on top of it, it can have a synergistic effect and you can get really hurt. And one of the biggest things of serotonin sickness is like a shakiness, and like your hands kind of claw up and like you can't really move your arms around. And I always kind of felt like T-Rex, you know, like, anyways, it's terrifying though. And I'm by myself. And in my head, I always had this idea that if I can make it to about 8 to 10 hours, that's usually where I'm on my way down or I'm going to be okay. And so I'm just watching the clock the entire time, waiting to see until 8 or 9 o'clock when I think I'm going to be okay. And I just continuously keep getting higher and higher and higher. because that's just how hard it is to tell how strong your acid is unless you've tried it. And so basically, I spent a lot of time just being really afraid that night. And I didn't touch acid for several years after that. And I bring that up just to say that when I rediscovered my use of LSD in the last couple of years, it's been in such a different way, because every once in a while, I'll take more than a small amount with a friend, never by myself. But 99% of my experiences with LSD over the last 5 years has been in sub-noticeable amounts. You know, and I'm very sensitive to most of these things, and so I can always feel it no matter what. But I'm usually taking about a quarter of a hit for when I'm functionally trying to go do something. And I take it really early in the morning because LSD is very stimulating. LSD has the backbone similar to serotonin, which is why it has its method of action. It's very similar to psilocybin and DMT through the 5-HT2A receptors, where 5-HT is a serotonin receptor. But there's a lot of different types of serotonin receptors, like 5-HT3 is affected by booze. You know, so alcohol has serotonin activity, but you're never going to hallucinate 5-HT3 most of the time. So LSD kind of looks like that, but it also has a much bigger butt. Like, I always think of it kind of like the tractor trailer of tryptamines, because it is technically a tryptamine, but its action is so dramatically different than psilocybin. And then it also has an affinity for dopamine receptors, which is why it is so stimulating. So sometimes dopamine activity can be reversed on something like psilocybin, and probably with LSD too. But part of the action of the substance is to trigger this dopamine response, where it's not just an accident or a cascade of effects afterwards because of something, you know? So I tend to take my doses incredibly early in the morning because I don't want it to affect my sleep. And I, even with small amounts, I can expect to have this thing in my body and in my consciousness for a very long amount of time. You know, some people are more sensitive than others, but I tend to feel it all day, all the way until I go to bed. You know, and when I wake up in the morning, I usually feel better. Not better, but I heard this myth once that sleep wipes it out. So like if you take, like some person told me once, if you took a hit of acid and then you fall asleep and you wake up 6 hours later, you'll be sober. I've also heard the exact opposite of that. But I do think that part of sleeping seems to wash out, and like there's like a reset button that is functionable in sleep. And I think that's part of why we sleep and why it is beneficial and healthy for us, is because it does reset and rewash and puts in new pieces for the new day, kind of, you know? So I take it very early in the morning, and I also expect not to have much of an appetite, and I think that's part of the dopamine response. But I found it very beneficial, especially for the ADHD neurodivergent crowd. The use of stimulants in our mainstream society for this type of brainism is massive, and especially within my generation, it seems like probably 1 in 3 or 2 out of 3 have been prescribed or given, you know, stimulants like Adderall or Ritalin or Concerta. Now, part of the idea of this is that it's stimulating and you're trying to help somebody with a lack of focus. And I get that, but I have a lot of disagreements with the whys and hows and exactly what we're doing in this avenue. And I would never, ever medicate my child. When he's 18, he can go decide to do whatever he wants, but I'm not going to put him on stimulants. I'm not going to put him on any medicinal regimen that's going to be something that's a daily thing. You know, I don't even think LSD should be taken daily. But because of that stimulating activity, I think it does give me something within that avenue of thought, where a lot of the times my biggest fear in this world has been boredom, and I make myself bored to the point that I don't pay attention because I'm so bored. Whereas if I can be invigorated and actively paying attention, which attention deficit disorder, it's in the name, I know. But if something can get me where I give a fuck, you know, that's what I always kind of think about it, is it's, you got to give somebody the give a shits. When they give a shit, they focus, they pay attention. And then all of a sudden, the entire brain opens up. Because otherwise, the door's not open. You're not putting any information in, right? However, I never got any real benefits, at least in the way that I was using stimulants. And I've never been on a regimen and on a small dose. You know, I always abuse things to the extent of trying to achieve something, where versus a doctor saying, do this a certain way, try it this way over time. You know, but I would be interested to see how small amounts of LSD potentially could be used in similar treatments. You know, and I would even be interested to see what that would look like in children. And as far as neuroplasticity goes, some of the my biggest leaps in my self-concept and even in physical acts has been facilitated by LSD. You know, so one of the things that I did a lot when I was younger was this dancing kind of thing called POI, P-O-I, where you, like, you can get ones that are light, like, that light up and have programmable sensors, that some people would even program their own light shows, and so that, like, it'd be really cool to watch, and other people's would do it with glow sticks. I was poor, so I would always just take my tube socks and fill them with rice, and then I would just swing them around just to have the weights, and I would do it with my eyes closed. And I could still see it in my head now. I bet you I could still do all the stuff. And they have all kinds of different moves, like beats. And it's a dancing kind of thing. So you have three beats, where you have three beats per whatever. One of the really harder moves is called a five beat. And you have to literally contort your wrist in a specific way to make this thing do what it's supposed to do. And I remember I've been trying to work on the five beat forever. You know, like, I feel like I've been trying for months. I'd watched videos. I've seen other people do it. I could see how I was supposed to do it in my head, and I just couldn't do it. And one night, I was having a party at my house, and I took intuitive LSD. And just on a whim, I decided I wanted to pick up my socks and try this move that I've been trying forever. And immediately, I did it. And I remember just being shocked. And all the information that I needed to perform the action was in my head. And then I just needed to make a little leap to bring it into reality. And there's something magical about LSD when it comes to that performance, when it comes to figuring out new actions. And so I do think that that would be interesting to see, you know, especially as a treatment, even in youth. And I know that might be dangerous to say and might get judgments. But if we're willing to give our kids Adderall, then maybe there's some other options. That's all I'm saying. So that's my jibber jabber for today. Is microdosing, sort of the ideas behind what microdosing is about. It's a lot more straightforward with something like mushrooms, but I do think that microdosing LSD is functionable. I think microdosing DMT is also another idea. And something that I've been doing recently is microdosing marijuana, like, because I've been a pothead for almost 20 years. And I have usually gone to the extreme when it comes to the dosage for cannabis. And recently I've been having a lot of issues with my ankle. I think I injured it at some time like a year or two ago, and now I'm having a lot of inflammation, and I have like a new ankle bone and a lot of anxiety about it. And one of the things I've been doing for the pain has been CBD. And I found CBD tinctures. But the thing about with pain and CBD is that the dosage that I need in order to get relief is pretty high. And as a whole, CBD has gotten really expensive. And I think it's just part of its popularity. And of course, you're going to go make money, do what you got to do. But, you know, I'm taking 100 milligrams in the morning, 100 milligrams at night, and I can't pay $70 for a gram of CBD. And I used to be able to find it at the dispensaries for 10 bucks a gram. So Robots, which is a really cool, if you, I don't know if they have them in your dispensary, but here in Colorado, I'm sure these are nationwide, but Robots have a bunch of different types of edibles. And I saw this one at the store last time I went, and they were 20 to 1. So 200 milligrams of CBD to 10 milligrams of THC. And I'd cut them in half, and I'd take half in the morning, half at night. And I'm only getting 5 milligrams of THC. And that's a really small amount that doesn't even really get me stoned. But over time, over the last couple weeks, I've been really looking at how I behave, and it's had a big impact on my mood levels and on how a lot of my irritability, especially early in the morning, you know? And so I found that even small amounts of cannabis can be really interesting. So it's not always about balls to the wall, huge dosage, macro, hero doses, whatever, with anything. I guess that's the main idea that I wanted to discuss this week. So if you have any material to add to the discussion, please let me know and I'll put your information on the next week. But yeah, so I hope some of that's relatable or helpful. I'm going to go find a book and then I'll let you go for the week. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Can't tell you enough how much I appreciate your ears and your attention and you giving me your time, especially if you're getting to the end of the episode. So I appreciate you. You make this possible. So today I'll be reading from book 5 of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, about halfway through the chapter, the book. Here goes. Number 16. Such as are your habitual thoughts, such also will be the character of your mind. For the soul is dyed by the thoughts. Dye it then with a continuous series of such thoughts as these. For instance, that where a man can live, there he can also live well. If he must live in a palace, then he can also live well in a palace. And again, consider that for whatever purpose each thing has been constituted, for this it has been constituted, and towards this it is carried. And its end is in that towards which it is carried. And where the end is, there also is the advantage and the good of each thing. Now the good for the reasonable animal is society. For that we are made for society has been shown above. Is it not plain that the inferior exist for the sake of the superior? But the things that have life as are superior to those that do not. And of those that have life, the superior are those that have reason. Number 17. To seek what is impossible is madness. And it is impossible that the bad should not do something of this kind. Number 18, nothing happens to any man that he is not formed by nature to bear. The same things happen to another, and either because he does not see that they have happened or because he could show a great spirit, he is firm and remains unharmed. It is a shame then that ignorance and conceit should be stronger than wisdom. 19, things themselves cannot touch the soul, not in the least degree. Nor have they admission to the soul, nor can they turn or move the soul. The soul turns and moves itself alone, and whatever judgments it may think proper to make, such it makes by remaking for itself the thing that present themselves to it. Bam. Now all of that I think has to do sort of with some of my main ideas from the beginning of the episode about our creative implement. Our ability to impact choice and to make our lives. And we do that through how we dye our thinking. And he's saying like tie-dye. Like he's talking about how we dye our mind with these ideas and these thoughts. And all of that is just so, so fruitful for me. And will always be one of my favorite philosophers, the late and great Marcus Aurelius. The philosopher king. All right, I'm gonna go see if Odin wants to talk. If he doesn't, then this will be it for the day. But thank you so much, and I hope you have a great week. And I'll talk to you next week.